We're holding up the Mishnah on the bottom of Chochet at the bottom of Chochet on the Beis. And more on this topic we have been talking about in the last couple of Mishnayos about when you're buying or not really buying but getting meat on Yom Tov from a butcher. So we had two Mishnayos ago. We had said that you can't, three Mishnayos ago, we said you can't join in with people financially. You can't say, for example, we're each in this for $10. So now a similar thing, a person can't tell a butcher, on Yom Tov, shkoli b'dinner baser, weigh out for me a dinner's worth of meat, because that would be mentioning money. I will shechet or mechalik b'neim, but you can just, the guy can shecht without mentioning specific financial amounts, and then everybody divides it among them, and after Yom Tov they square accounts. One thing, some of the point out, the chiddush of this part compared to the other one is, even, I think the Meiri says this, that when you say a dinner's worth of meat, that might be, basically, I mean, that you're trying to describe a certain quantity of meat. So you would think it might be allowed, but no.
Why would I think it would be allowed?
You're not thinking so much of it as an amount of money. You're thinking of it as kind of, I mean, you are. You're mentioning money, but you're trying to use it as a description of the amount of meat you want. It would be the equivalent of, say...
When you say dinner of meat...
It would be the equivalent, effectively, you might think it's the equivalent, effectively, of saying to me, give me a leg. But no.
No, it's not. You're giving a price, you're giving
that's the point. That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So how should you do it? You don't want to buy the whole animal. You don't want to buy a quarter of it or something. You just want a small amount, a dinner or two's worth. What can you say? I'm going to give some examples. Kihad de besura amri. In surah, for example, they would say tauta or pagu tauta. Give me a tauta or a half a tauta. In all the a tauta is an amount. In all these different cities that the Gemara is going to mention, it was a standard thing. When the butcher was cut up the animals, they cut them up into certain standard size pieces. And these pieces had different names. The standard size had different names in different parts of the country. In Surah, for example, one of these pieces was called a tauta. So you could go to the butcher and tell him, give me a tauta or give me a half a tauta. I mean, it's an amount. Like in modern terms, it might be like a pound, a half a pound, whatever. Benedesh, what?
Greek for a third.
Okay, so then I say. Benedesh amri chelko pagu chelka. In Neresh, another city, they would say, give me a chelka, which means piece, or a half of a chelka. Pumadissa amri uzia or pagu uzia. In Pumadissa, the terms they used were uzia and half an uzia. In Nahar Pekod and in Masa Machasi, the terms they used were a riva, which means a quarter and a half a riva. The Gemara, these are different examples that you know. When you go into these different places, these are the kinds of terms you can use. One thing, by the way, you see from this, historically, throughout the generations in Bavel, there were, throughout the times of the Gemara and later on in the times of the Gaonim, there were two major yeshivas in Bavel. One in Nahauda, which later moved to Pumbatissa, and the other one in Surah. The one in Surah, we find some references in the Gemara, and also later in the times of the Gaonim, we find it referred to as Masa Machasya. So some people have the impression that Masa Machasya is another name for Surah. We see from our Gemara that not. In Surah, the term was Tarka, and in Masa Machasya, it's Riva. What it was is, the explanation is that Masa Machasya was close to Surah, it was a suburb of it, but they weren't actually physically the same place. Mishnah says, on Yom Tov, a person can say to his friend, "Mali li klizeh, fill up for me this keli." Avaloi b'midah, but not with a measurement. What does that mean? We'll talk about it in the Gemara. No, but that's the point. In other words, there's fill up a keli, like fill me up this cup, versus there's fill me up a measurement. Well, we're going to talk about in the Gemara what you're allowed and what you're not allowed. Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, Kli Shal Midah Lo Yimalenu. Rabbi Yehuda says, if it's a measuring cup, then you're not allowed to fill it. Ma'aseh b'Abba Shaul ben Botnis. It happened with Abba Shaul ben Botnis. He was a storekeeper in Yerushalayim during the time of the Second Beis Hamikdash. Shoyim Malam Yidosev Me'erev Yantiv. He used to fill up his containers Erev Yantiv, because you can't because they were containers. They were a certain standard size, so you can't fill them up on Yantiv. And in fact, one. One of the Mefarshim says that this, that Rabbi Yehuda is actually bringing this as a proof to his opinion. I'm telling you, Tanakama, are telling me you're allowed to fill up a keli as long as you don't actually mention a specific measurement, like a pint or whatever. I'm telling you that if it's a keli that's known to hold a pint, you're not allowed to fill it up. And I have a proof. You see that Abishol ben Botnis used to fill up his kelim erev yomtiv. V'noisna l'chokas b'yomtiv, and then he'd give them to customers on yomtiv. Abishol, I remember Abishol. This is the first we had Abishol ben Botnis. Here we just have Abishol plain. Maybe they were related. I don't know. Anyway, he says after Moyed Oisakein, it wasn't just on Yom Tov that Abishol ben Botnis would do that, fill up his kelim before Yom Tov. He would do it on Chol Hamoed also. Mipnei Beruri Hamidos, because of the clarifying of the measurements. Beruri Hamidos, Rashi says a little later, means you're talking about when you pour wine, for example. You used to sell wine. When you pour wine, it foams up. That foaming is called berurin, either because you have to remove it before you drink the wine, or berurin, the Russian borer, it's clear because it's like clear bubbles. Either way, the point is that he would fill up the kelim before Yom Tov, because it's actually Rashi here says that he doesn't like the Gittur Sahir in the Mishnah of Ifnei Berurin Hamidus. Because the Gemara is going to say that Abishol ben Botnis had a different reason for pre-filling them Chol Hamoed. The reason was, as the Gemara is going to say, because Chol Hamoed is teaching many people Torah. He doesn't want to be wasting time filling up containers when he could be teaching. So instead, he'd fill them up the night before. Later on, Rashi says, if we accept that the Mishnah uses the word Mepnei Berurah Amidus, it kind of amounts to the same thing. Because when you're filling up a keli, and it bubbles, and there's bubbles, you have to make sure that the bubbles dissipate before you give it to the customer, so you get the full measure. So therefore, in order not to waste that time, he'd fill them up the night before in order that way, if he has to wait around for the bubbles, he can be doing it then when he's not teaching anyway, rather than the next
day.
Yes. Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So we had in last week's parsha that you have to be careful about midah, about mishkal, about mesura. The Gemara actually points out in Bava Metzia that mesura doesn't just mean liquid measures in general. A mesura is actually the name of a specific small liquid measure. The Gemara says there, I think it's like 130 somethings of a lug. So we're talking about like a tiny little container, a half ounce, like smaller than a shot glass. And even with that kind of container, when you're filling it up for somebody, if you're selling somebody a mesura's worth of liquid, you have to make sure he gets an absolutely full container, not that some of it is foam on the top.
Simple. He doesn't buy
bubbles. You're not buying bubbles. Therefore, you have to make sure when you're pouring the wine, if it's foaming up, you have to let it settle, or you have to skim off the foam, or whatever you do, in order that he gets a completely full container. So either the two possibilities are that he'd pre-fill his kelim on the nights of Chol Hamoed in order that way during the daytime he has time to teach Torah, or that he's pre-filling them in order that this way, the time it takes to deal with the bubbles, he can deal with that at night. He can deal with that at night rather than the next day. And the Chachamim say that's not really a proof, because in fact Abishol ben Botnis used to do this kind of thing all the time, that he would fill them up the night before. He would do that even on weekdays, because in order to get out every little bit, in order to drip out every little bit from the container that there can be. You know how when you pour from one container into another, inevitably there's some left over in the top container. He didn't want to have that left over, although as the Gemara is going to say, he ended up always having some anyway. So therefore, what he'd do is, if somebody comes, if he knows, for example, he's going to be selling a container that's supposed to contain, let's say, a gallon of wine to a customer the next day, he would pre-fill it the night before. He'd take one of his other containers, he'd take a barrel or whatever, he'd pour it into there, and he'd leave the barrel that it's coming from hanging over the other one all night long. So that way every little drop will come down. Yeah. So you might ask, my avaloi b'midah, what do you mean that you're not allowed to fill up a container with measurement? It means It means when the Tanakhama is saying you're allowed to fill up a keli, but it's not allowed to be a keli that's specifically meant for measuring. The measuring cup that you usually fill up to a certain amount and then sell it. But if it's a keli that is meant for measuring, which means it's like a backup, so you have, for example, you know, a storekeeper will have, let's say, there'll be a particular container that he always uses for measuring, and then he has a backup one in case this one breaks, then he'll start using the other one. So the other one is meant for measuring, but it hasn't actually been used for measuring yet. That you're allowed to. That you're allowed to. That you're allowed to fill up.
It has no measures, or it doesn't have measures.
The fashion is it doesn't have measures on it. You know how much it holds. But because it hasn't actually been used for measuring yet, then it's not so much uvdin dechol to use that. Whereas then Rabbi Yehuda, after Rabbi Yehuda Lameimer, and then Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, no, afilu kli ha'emid lamida lo yimalenu, even the backup one, because ultimately it is designed, it will be eventually used for measuring when the first one breaks, then even now you can't fill it on Yom. So Gemara asks, Alma, so is from here, do we have a proof from here? Gabi Simchas Yomtev, Rabbi Yehuda Lachomer, Verbon Lachola. So you're telling me then that Rabbi Yehuda is machmir when it comes to Simchas Yomtev. He's telling us that he's putting restrictions on how you can buy wine on Yomtev, which you're going to need for your Yomtev meal, and that Rabbanan are being makel, because the Rabbanan seem to be saying that you're allowed to use this backup keli, and Rabbi Yehuda not. The problem with that is, v'ha'ipcha shaminim lahu. We saw just the other way around in the previous Mishnah. Oh, two nights ago. This is an we learned yesterday. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a shaykhulad and vasa kenegara kliu kenegara kleifet. That when it came to weighing meat, Rabbi Yehuda said it's true you can't weigh against fixed weights, against the regular kinds of weights that you use during the rest of the year, but you can weigh meat with a utensil or a cleaver or whatever on the opposite side of the scale, and after Yom Tov you'll figure out how much it weighs. Whereas the Chachamim say you can't pay attention to a balanced scale at all. So there you have the other way around. Rabbi Yehuda is being makel for the sake of Simchas Yomtev in order that you'll be able to buy meat for Yomtev, and then Rabbanan are being machmir. But that's the problem. Kasha did Rabbi Yehuda, Kasha did Rabbanan, did Rabbanan. So we have a contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda's two statements and between the Rabbanan's two statements. Why in one place is he makel and in the other place is machmir? The answer is, did Rabbi Yehuda, did Rabbi Yehuda like Kasha? The two statements of Rabbi Yehuda are not contradictory because Hasan Ksha'ina Omid Lamida, because over there, what are you doing? You're weighing against the utensil. The utensil is not normally meant to use as a weight. You may happen to know how much it weighs, or at least after Yom Tov you can figure that out. But it's not designed for weighing. So therefore, it doesn't really look like Ovdin Dechol. It doesn't really look like Ovdin Dechol to use it. It's not a normal way of weighing. We said yesterday, for example, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you want to weigh out meat for somebody on Yom Tov. You don't know how much the meat weighs. So you're going to take, for example, you'll take a cup, let's say, and put it on the other side of the scale, balance the meat out against it, and after Yom Tov, you'll figure out how much the cup weighs. Or even maybe you know already how much the cup weighs. You're an experienced butcher. You have a rough idea how much your various utensils weigh. So you do that. But because the cup or whatever, the cleaver or whatever it is you're using is not designed for weighing against. So therefore, it's not so bad.
If it was designed, that would be...
That's the problem. Omid lamida, whereas over here, you're talking about something that is designed for weighing. Yes, you haven't used it for weighing yet because you already have one. But it's designed for when the first one breaks or gets nicked or whatever it is and it's no longer usable, then you're going to start using this one. So effectively, it's still already over in the coil. Whereas the Rabbanan, so that's Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbanan are the Rabbanan Lami, like Hashem. When it comes to the Rabbanan versus the Rabbanan, also there's no contradiction. Similar idea. Hasam ka'abit to the Abdin Bechel, because over there, when it comes to weighing, you are sort of doing like the way you do on weekdays. I mean, even on weekdays, sometimes you don't happen to have your weighing, your weights around, and so you use some makeshift weight. So here, when you're using a makeshift weight on Yom Tov, it seems exactly like you do sometimes on weekdays. So therefore, it's Ovdin Bechel. Hacha loyka avid kedavin. That's why they're machmir. Hacha, whereas here, where they're make a loyka avid kedavin b'chol. You're not doing like you do on weekdays because this keli has not yet. The expression Rashi uses adayin la yotat tivay shom kli zelamida. This keli is not yet known for being used for measurement. Yes, it's designed that eventually you're going to be able to. But as of now, it's not one that's actually marked with markings or whatever, like a measuring cup. It's not something which is obvious, which is obviously used for midah. Yeah. The first one doesn't necessarily have markings either, but you have an existing keli, which you know, and, you know, holds 7 ounces, and then you have a backup one. When this one breaks, the other one also holds 7 ounces. So that's one explanation of what the Tanakhama versus Rabbi Yehuda means. The Tanakhama is that we're talking about the main one that you use all the time versus a backup one that you're going to use when the first one breaks. Second explanation, Rava Amar, my Avalei B'Midah, what does the Mishnah mean when the Tanakhama says that you're allowed to tell somebody fill up the scaly, but without mentioning a measurement? It means Shalo Yizko Lo Shem Midah. It means you're not allowed to mention a measurement. You're not allowed to tell him, for example, this keli holds 7 ounces, fill it up for me, please. Because that would be mentioning a measurement. But even if it's meant for measuring, Rava says, the Tanakhama would say you are allowed to measure it, as long as you're not actually mentioning how many ounces or pints or what have you.
Even if it has measurements on the cup and you don't mention it, for the Tanakhama, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know necessarily if it has actual measurements marked on it. Maybe not necessarily, but here.
That's what we're saying.
No, because we're saying it's miyuchad b'midah, same thing as we said before. That it's meant for measuring. In other words, you know that it holds X amount, and you use it all the time. You use it all the time for your measuring. So we're not talking about the backup one, like we said before. We're talking about the actual measuring cup that you regularly use to measure out liquids or whatever it is for your customers. But as long as you're not actually measuring the amount, then you're good. The Asr of Yehuda Lameimah, and then Rabbi Yehuda comes again to be Machmer and says, Kriyam, Yuchad Lamidah Lo Yimalenu, that a measuring cup you're not allowed to fill. Because it's meant for measuring, even if you're not mentioning the actual amount it holds, you still can't. And by the way, again, we're not necessarily just talking about you fill up the whole thing. I mean, what happens if you come to the storekeeper and you tell him, fill this up halfway? It's still a midah, exactly. But, right. Now again, the Gemara goes through the same thing. Alma gabe simchas yomtiv, Rabbi Yehuda lachumra, Rabbanan lachula. So it comes out then that when it comes to simchas yomtiv, Rabbi Yehuda is being machmir. He's not allowed. He's not allowing you to use this measuring cup since we know how much it holds, and the chachamim are being meikel. And again, va'ib chashamin and lahu. But didn't we say the other way around in the Mishnah yesterday? The Tanan, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a shekel on a balsa connected a kliu connected a kliu. So Rabbi Yehuda is allowing you to weigh meat against a cup, against the utensil, or against the cleaver. Where the Rabbanan say that you don't pay attention to a balanced scale at all. Alma Rabbi Yehuda lachul over Rabbanan lachomer. So there you see that Rabbi Yehuda is being machmir when it comes to simchas yomtiv. And again, we're talking about things that are Rabbanan over here. This whole concept of not measuring on Yom Tov is a din d'rabbanan.
There's no remnant in the Torah.
Doesn't seem to be. In fact, actually, we learned in the last Mishnah of Shabbos that actually you are allowed to measure on Shabbos and on Yom Tov where it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. We talked over there about a case actually involving the same Abishol ben Botnis, where they had to measure a crack in an archway or whatever, a canopy between two houses to tell where the tumor is spreading from one house to the other. And they were allowed to do that on Shabbos. It was Shabbos, yeah. But other examples are, for example, you're allowed to measure a mikvah on Shabbos if somebody needs to tovel in it. There's an interesting discussion Rav Moshe Feinstein has in one of his shuvos whether you're allowed to take somebody's temperature on Shabbos. And he says yes. He says it's not that the kind of measurement that we're talking about over here that you're not allowed to do is no. We're not talking about pikuach nefesh. That we're not talking about. We're talking about a person has a bit of a fever. It's not a matter of pikuach nefesh, but it's still useful to know what their temperature is. So you know what you need to do for them. So Rav Moshe discusses over there. It's the kind of measurement that we're saying over here is also the kind of measurement that has to do with buying and selling. So even if you're not doing it specifically for buying and selling, we're restricting it. Measuring temperature with a thermometer has nothing at all to do with buying and selling. So therefore, it's allowed. He brings on other grounds also, and not everybody agrees with that. There's other posts who disagree with that concept, but that's what he says.
It's interesting that it's not because of health, but it's just because it doesn't have anything to do with buying.
Well, no, he mentions the health aspect of it also. That's a little bit a matter of a mitzvah because you got to know what to do for the chaylah, yeah. But the main point is, if it was the kind of measuring that intrinsically would be usur, then it would be usur even if it was a matter of, then it would be usur even in that case, unless it was a matter of pikuach nefesh. Yeah.
Pikuach nefesh on Yom Tov, but not measuring, it interferes with the person to have a normal meal, you have to measure.
We'll get to that soon as far as measuring ingredients, right? We'll get to that.
If you have to inject something on Shabbos Yom Tov, then you're allowed to measure.
Well, I guess then, yeah, because then you have no choice. I don't know, yeah. Anyway, so again, the answer is so kasha de Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, kasha de Rabbanan, de Rabbanan. So again, we have this contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda's two statements and the Chacham's two statements. And the answer is Rabbi Yehuda, de Rabbi Yehuda, kasha. The two statements of Rabbi Yehuda are not a contradiction because Hasem b'she'ena miyuchad l'mida. There, we're talking about where the cleaver or whatever it is not meant for measuring. This is a slightly different answer than we said before, because again, before we were focusing on whether this keli is designed for measuring or whether it's actually used for measuring. Before we were talking about the difference between in our Mishnah whether it's designed for measuring or not, even if you haven't used it yet. So we said a cleaver is not really designed for measuring. Whereas a chamim counter that once in a while you use it for that purpose anyway. Here we're saying that it's enemy yuchad lemida. A cleaver is not specifically meant, it's not specifically designed for measure, for weighing. Yes, once in a while you might use it, but it's not really made for that purpose. Chamim yuchad lemida. Whereas over here you're talking about a keli, which is actually meant for measuring and which you regularly measure with.
So we're more actually the general Mishnah is more here because it has to be meyuchad for the media. Over there we didn't say that.
So that's what Rava's explanation is more lenient than the first explanation. Yeah, the first explanation was that even the backup one you can't use according to Rabbi Yehuda because it was designed for measuring.
So whereas meyuchad.
Not me, right. Whereas, yeah. The first one was Oymed Lamida, right. The second one is Miyuchad Lamida, you're allowed, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying no. So now we're saying, in the case of the cleaver, fine, it's also not Miyuchad Lamida. Whereas in our case, a measuring cup is Miyuchad Lamida.
That's according to Rava.
That's according to Rava, yeah. The Rabbanan Lami Lakash, and the Rabbanan statements are not a contradiction either. Hasam Ka'avid Kada'avdin B'chol, because there he's doing like you do on a weekday, because again, once in a while, a butcher doesn't have his weights available, and so he uses a cleaver or some other makeshift thing. Hachalai Ka'avid Kada'avdin B'chol, whereas over here, you're not doing like you do on a weekday. Now, in the first explanation, you could say you're not because you don't usually use this one. You only use it as a backup. So you haven't used it yet. How would that apply over here, where you use this one all the time? The reason is to have the inchi demakavri chamra the mana tequila, because it happens sometimes when somebody even not in a store, you're offering somebody a drink of wine, you give it to him the mana tequila in a measuring cup, the shasta when they drink it. No, but the point is though that therefore when it comes to our Mishnah, which is talking about you're filling up a cup with liquid like wine or whatever, yeah sometimes I actually have seen this in person a while back one time we went to Andrusier's in Kingston to get the Kelish cloth, to get the little shot glasses, and they sold us a package of little medicine cups. So there you literally have we're giving our guests Shabbos wine in measuring cups. So therefore, so it's not considered. So therefore, it's not considered Rov Dindachal. Then the Mishnah had said Ma'isa Ba'Abashol Ben Botnis that we had with Abashol Ben Botnis, where comes Yom Tov, he would fill up his containers before Yom Tov, and we said that was because you're not allowed to measure out on Yom Tov. And then we continued, and we said what he did on Chol HaMoed also. Tana, we learned in a Braisa, Afa Moed Oisik Kain, he would do the same thing on Chol HaMoed, fill him up the night before, but Bnei Bitzel Beis HaMedrash, because of wasting time from learning. Rashi says the vort is like this. He was this Abishol ben Botnis, he was a storekeeper, but he was also a great Talmud Chacham. This is not the regular Abishol. The Abishol explained in the Mishnah after Moed Oisikain. Maybe they were grandfather and grandson, I have no idea. Anyway, Abishol ben Botnis, besides being a storekeeper, that was his side thing, so to speak, the main thing was he was a great Talmud Chacham. Chol HaMoed, many people would come to him to learn. Because Chol HaMoed, people aren't working, or at least not working as much as usual, because many kinds of work are also or restricted on Chol HaMoed. Now, so therefore, during the daytime, he would want to be able to spend as much time in the Beis Medrash, teaching, answering shilos, etc. So therefore, he didn't want to waste time filling up containers on Chol HaMoed. So therefore, at night, which is not a time when people are in the Beis Medrash anyway, because they're at home eating supper, or going to bed, or whatever, that's when he'd fill up his containers, he'd prepare them. Right. And then again, we said before about the Berurah Hamidus thing, that the idea that the Berurah Hamidus thing was the idea that also he'd fill them up at night in order that any foaming that takes place again will happen then, and he can deal with it then, rather than having to waste time the next day waiting for it to unfoam before he can finish filling it.
At night, Erev Yom Tov?
No, every night of Chol HaMoed, we're saying. Yeah. Tanan Abanan, we learn it at Braisa. Eventually, over the years, he collected 300 barrels full of this foam from the wine. Because inevitably, so Mepharshim say, I mean, we just said he tried to make sure there is no foaming, so what happened? The vort is, even he pre-filled his containers before Yom Tov or before Chol HaMoed, but even so, he had so many customers that sometimes he'd run out of pre-filled containers. So then he has no choice. He has to fill them up during the day. And then the customers themselves don't have the time to wait around until the foam dissipates. They just take it and go. So gradually, over the years, he collected bit by little by little. He saved up this extra bits of wine, and eventually it came to 300 barrels full. His colleagues, the Yerushalmi says that the Yerushalmi says that this is Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, who was also a storekeeper. Abishol ben Botnis sold wine. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik sold oil. So his friend did a similar kind of thing. He would also pre-fill his containers, but he also ended up collecting 300 barrels, from the drops that didn't flow down. Because like I said before, Abba Shaul and also Rebbe Elazar Reb Tzadik would put their containers up, they'd make the containers the night before, even on weekdays, in order that everything will drip in. But inevitably, not everything drips in. You know how it is, like, you know. Not even it dries, but whatever, not every bit drips out. Which, by the way, the halacha, they didn't have to do all this. The actual halacha is when you're selling wine or oil or whatever it is to somebody else, you have to wait, the halacha is, until the solid column of liquid has stopped and three individual drops have come out, and then that's it. At that point, you can say the thing is full enough and you give it to the customer, and anything that's left in there is yours to keep. So we assume that the customer doesn't mind that little amount. But here, they were machmir on themselves. But still, over the years, again, you know, there is that little bit. So eventually that also amounted to 300 barrels of wine.
That's a proof.
Of oil. Yeah.
Proof that it takes to be
mocked. Accumulate. Hevium lefnei agizborim liYerushalayim. At that point, they brought all of this wine and all this oil to the treasurers of the Beis Mikdash in Yerushalayim. Basically, they wanted to know what they wanted to use. They wanted to use them for hektish. Right. Now, the thing is, Rashi says, they themselves didn't want to declare it hektish for two reasons. Number one, they're not sure whether this stuff legally belongs to them. So they may not have the right to declare it hektish. Number two, even if maybe they were coined it by as Zela, we learned in Sukkah, you're not allowed to bring an Ola or any other korban from Gezel. So therefore, they brought it to the Gizborim basically to ask them, you know, what should we do with it?
What do you think he's
done? Marsha says the vote is that they thought maybe at least if we give it to the Gizborim and then the Gizborim declare it hektish fine. By it having passed from our possession into the possession of the Gizborim, then already there's been years, there's been Shinur Rishus, that already will be good enough that it can become hektish.
The other way around, and it's worse, but the hektish they stolen, basically.
No, because ultimately, I mean, anytime somebody donates something to hektish, I mean, it, you know, you
donate.
No, but that's what we're talking about over here. But we're saying over here.
No,
that's what we're saying. So Avishal ben Baptist will take these barrels of wine, he'll give them to the Gizbar. The Gizbar then, having legally acquired it, the Gizbar didn't do anything wrong, he will then declare them hektish. That's what Marashal says, that's what they were thinking.
Because he didn't know.
Anyway, the treasurer told them, "Yeah, it's cooking lekach. You don't need that. I mean, obviously, you know, the people were obviously meichel. You know, you don't need you're allowed to keep this stuff. You don't have to declare it hektish or anything like that. You're allowed to keep it. I mean, obviously, the customer is meichel on that little bit that sticks to the barrel.
And if they wanted, they could declare it.
Right. Yeah.
Why do you say that? They can require Yirsh. The fact that the customer walked away is like
that's Yirsh already, but then you need Yirsh and you also need Shinu Rishut. That's what Marashah is pointing out. That's why they wanted to give it to the Gizbarim and then have the Gizbarim make it hektish. But the Gizbarim are telling them you don't need any of that. The customer never intended to keep that anyway. You don't even need Shinu Rishut. There's no Zela involved. Amr Lahem, Abba Shaul, and Rebbe Elazar answer them. But we don't want this. We don't want to have hanah from what should by rights belong to somebody else. Yeah, technically it's not an issue, but we don't want to. Amr Lahem, so the Gizbarim tell them, in that case, if you want to be machmir on yourself, then use them for public needs. Don't use them for hektish, but use them, for example, as Limar is going to say in a minute, for example, to dig water pits for people. D'tanya, as we learn in the Braith, it's a gozol that any day let me gozol. If somebody stole and he doesn't know who he stole from, you should use the money. You don't know who to return it to, so therefore use it to benefit the public, and that way, eventually, the people who it was stolen from will also benefit from it as well.
Why don't you just simply ask the buyers and tell them, you know, if I have an extra phone where everything is not...
Even if they had asked them, I mean, that's the thing. By implication, the buyers are being mochel because they walk away with there still being the foam over there, there still being the little... Yeah. Yes. They didn't have to ask them, but they wanted to be machmer, yeah. My ninu, what does it mean? Sochei rabim. Omer of chista boris shichin amiris. It means, for example, that you use this money to dig various kinds of water pits. That then water supplies. That then everybody needs water. So this way, ultimately, the people who goes back to the people that it was taken from.
Okay.
Exactly. That's what the Gizbarah told them. Instead of giving it to Hekdesh, do something with it that'll benefit everybody. Yeah. Going back to the dinim about measuring, Adver Rav Chista the Rabbana Ukva, Rav Chista took Rabbana Ukva for a walk. That's what Rashi says the word Adver means. It means he took him for a walk around the city. There's other explanations. The Yaivet says that it means basically like he honored him in public in order that people will accept the following din when he tells it in the future. I've seen a different explanation that Rabbana Ukva was becoming the new Reish Galusa, so that Rav Chista introduced him. Whatever it is, the Darash, and then he darshan as follows. A person is not allowed to measure out barley to give to his animal on Yom Tov, because you're not allowed to measure on Yom Tov. Even though this is not measuring for the purpose of selling, it's still measuring. But you can scoop out a kav or two. You can take the kav container itself and like scoop out a hole in the middle of the pile of barley. And you can put it in front of the animal, and there's no problem, because that's not a normal way of measuring.
Scoop it up.
Yeah. I mean, Rashi actually says the expression "bakav atman noikav bakri," that you use the kav itself to make a hole in the pile. So I don't know actually whether Rashi means that you scoop it out like that, or whether Rashi means like you take the kav and sink it in until the stuff falls in. I don't know. Whatever it is, that's not a normal way of measuring. Now, to your point, Yaakov, about what about measuring ingredients for cooking? A baker is allowed to measure out spices, and put it into his stew. Conditionally, in order he doesn't over season it. Yeah. Okay. Right. A nachtim usually means a baker, but here we're using it in the sense of a chef. Yeah.
Like a regular person, or
we're talking about. I mean, it would apply to a regular person also if he usually measures out his ingredients exactly. I mean, you have many people who don't. When my wife cooks, for example, even on weekdays, she doesn't measure out her ingredients exactly, so she wouldn't be allowed to run Yom Tov.
But she would be allowed to run Yom Tov.
No, she wouldn't be allowed to run Yom Tov because you don't on weekdays anyway. But if you regularly do on weekdays, then yes, you're allowed to run Yom Tov so you don't over season it. A similar day, Amar Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba, Amar Rav, Moedetes Isha Kemach b'Yom Tov, a woman can measure out flour on Yom Tov, and Esenes L'Sichi Sasa, and use it to make her dough, Kedesha Titzachayin b'Chala b'Ayin Yafe, in order that she'll take Chala generously. Because Chala, there's supposed to be, back when they gave Chala to the Kohen, there was a certain amount you're supposed to give. 1/24 out of a homemade dough, and 1/48 out of a basis dough. So when if you don't know how much flour you put in, then you're going to think, I didn't put in that much. I'm going to take out a smaller piece. You don't want her to do that. You want her to give a proper size piece. So therefore, you're allowed to measure the flour. Or Shmuel Amar Aser, where Shmuel says it's Aser to do that. Yeah. Question is, the Gemara asks, "Vatana Dvei Shmuel Mutter," but a Braisa of the Yeshiva of Shmuel, just like we have Reb Chiya and Rashi says. Just like Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia collected collections of braises that became the Tosefta, similarly Shmuel collected a braises, and there's a braise in there which says that it's mutter, that you're allowed to measure the flour, like Rav says. When Abaya says, well, you know what, then Hashad Amar Shmuel Osir, who's Tvatan Deve Shmuel Mutter, well, then if Shmuel himself said it's Osir, but the braise that he taught says it's mutter, then it means Shmuel Halacha L'maisa Osir L'Ashminen. It means that Shmuel is coming to tell us practical halacha. It means it's another one of these cases, Rashi says, of halacha ve'in modin case, where technically the halacha is you're allowed to measure it out, like Rav says, and that's what Tana Devei Shmuel is saying. But if somebody comes and asks you, am I allowed to measure out the flour? Tell him no. And that's why Shmuel himself is saying it's osur. No, that's what Shmuel himself is saying it's osur. So the Braisa is telling us the technical halacha, and Shmuel is telling us what the Rav should tell somebody who comes to ask him. That's Rashi's explanation. That's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos has a different explanation that Shmuel really does disagree with his own Braisa. That yeah, he taught the Braisa, but he himself doesn't agree with it. He himself really says that you're not allowed to do it. And then Tosfos discusses who is the halacha actually like. But one thing Tosfos says is nowadays this whole issue is not really so relevant, because nowadays we don't give challah to the kohen anyway. We take a certain size piece. We're not makbid to take 1/24, because anyway we're burning it. So therefore, you don't have an issue. You have to measure it out in order to know the proper size piece to take. You're anyway not taking a certain size. You're anyway just taking a certain size piece, no matter what the size of the dough. So therefore, you're not allowed to measure it.
Right.
So today, in other words, practically speaking, the halacha comes out that you can't. Yeah. One thing is, in Shulchan Aruch, it points out, and Tosfos points out at the end of it here, and from there in Shulchan Aruch, that when it comes to baking matzah on Pesach itself, there you have a bit of an issue. If you make less than a shiur challah at a time, then you can't take challah. You don't have the mitzvah of taking challah. But you're not allowed to need more than a shiur challah at a time because that large amount of dough, you're not going to be able to work it over all the time, and there's a possibility of it becoming chametz. So what do? In practice, in Shulchan Aruch, it says what you should do is anyway when it comes to taking challah on Pesach. We learned about this before. What you should do is don't take the challah while the matzah is still a dough form, because what are you going to do with the challah afterwards? Instead, wait till the matzah is baked and then put it all into one container and then take one matzah as challah. So therefore, l'chatchila then make your dough in smaller quantities. Make sure it's a good deal less than a shiur challah, so you don't have to measure. And as far as what are you going to do? As far as the mitzvah of challah, you'll put them all together afterwards and take challah. So therefore, you still have no need to measure the flour. Speaking of flour, another din, Tana Rabbanan, Ein Shonin Kemach B'Yamtiv. You're not allowed to re-sift flour on Yamtiv. So this is, we're talking about, you already sifted it before Yamtiv. Now you want to re-sift it again in order to clean it out, in order to make it nicer, cleaner flour. So you're not allowed to do that. However, Mishum Rapapis, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Amr Shonin. They said in the name of Rapapis and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira that you are allowed to. Because, Rashi says, the difference is that the first time you're sifting is a matter of burr, and you're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov, because you could have. Rashi says the reason is that burr is parshat an av malacha, and Rashi himself has said a few times the general rule what malachas are allowed and not allowed on Yom Tov is anything that could have been done before Yom Tov. The first sifting you could have done before Yom Tov, according to the Tanakhama, even the second sifting you could have done before Yom Tov. Therefore, you can't do it on Yom Tov. There are other Mepharshim who explain, other Rishonim who explain, and this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that the difference is the malachas that are also on Yom Tov are the ones that you usually do in large quantities, like harvesting or whatever. So the same thing, when it comes to sifting flour, it's usually done in large quantities, but industrial quantities, right. So the first time, and according to the Tanakhama, also the second time, whereas according to the Papas and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, no, because already, I mean, you can see, according to Rashi, it's not an issue, it's not a matter of burr, because everybody can see there's no bran or anything left in it, you're just sifting it to make it finer. And according to the other ones, again, because it's not the kind of thing you do in large quantities like that. The shoven, and everybody agrees, shem nafal aseichem tzurer kesem, that if a pebble or a piece of wood or a chip of wood for a splinter falls into the flour, shoshonin, that you definitely are allowed to resift it. Because then you're resifting it not in order to just make it finer flour, but to get out the dirt. Tani Tana Kamei Rabina, Tana Torah Braise in front of Ravina, Ein Shonin Kemach B'Yamtiv, that, you know, like we just said, you're not allowed to re-sift flour on Yamtiv, Avol Nofer Tzurei Kesem, but if a piece of a stone or a piece of wood falls in, Bura B'Yadiv, then you can pick it out with a hand. Amalei, and Ravina tells him, what are you talking about? Kol Shekein D'Aser, all the more so that would be Aser. That really is Davalei Kebura. That really is like Bura. With a sieve, it's not exactly like burr, because you can see the normal purpose of sifting is to get out the bran and the shells and whatnot. And here you're only doing it to get out the pebbles. So what is the actual din we'll talk about soon when we get to the end of the Gemara. Dorash Rava bar Rav Huna Zuti apischa de Nahavda. Rava, the son of Rav Huna Zuti, darshan at the gate of Nahavda. That shonin kemach b'yamtiv, you're allowed to re-sift flour on yamtiv. Amal to Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman tells the people over there, Puku v'imrulei l'Abba, go out and tell Abba, Rashi says Abba here means like my chaver, go tell him, Shkilati vosach v'shadi achizri, achizri. You might as well take your favor and throw it into the thorns. In other words, you didn't really accomplish anything, you didn't really do us any favors by darshaning that. Because Kazi Kama Mahulta, Hadran Vinahauda, go and look how many sieves are going around again, re-sifting in the Hauda. In other words, everybody in the Hauda already knows it's Mutter. What are you accomplishing? What do you think? You're telling us a chiddush, we already know it. Dveso de Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef's wife, Nahala Kimcha Agaba de Mahulta. She would, when she was re-sifting flour on Yom Tov, she would do it up using the back of the sieve. She'd just turn the sieve over and sift the flour that way, because you figure that'll be a shinui. Amalah, so Rabbi Yosef tells her, Chazi, Look, that I want good quality bread. In other words, it's effectively, he's saying, what's the reason you're sifting? In order to make good quality bread, you're allowed to do that. Hatchila on Yom Tov. You don't have to make any shit. Yes. A similar thing. Rav Ashi, Nala Kimcha Agaba de Psera. Rav Ashi's wife used to re-sift flour on the back of the table. What does that mean? Rashi says that we're talking about over here a table that has built into it a little concave area that normally you re-sift, that normally you sift flour into that. And then I guess and then you scoop it out of there. Instead, she on Yom Tov would turn the table top over and sift on the back of it, again as a shinri. As a shinri. Tosfos says that we're talking about that it means agava de b'sara means she would sift onto the table itself. Normally you don't sift onto the table. Normally you sift into a pan, into a keli of some kind. She would do it directly onto the table, again as a shinri. No, not turning the table upside down, but just taking the sieve and holding it directly over the table instead of over a pan. That's Tosfos' explanation. That was what Rabbi Yosef's wife did.
Well,
that you saw people turning over the sieve. So yeah. Rabbi Yosef was not blind his whole life. He became blind late in life. You know, this may have been before. This must have been before that. I don't know. Or maybe she told him what she's doing. I don't know. Anyway, so Rav Ashi's wife used to do it on the table, which again, according to Rashi, means on the reverse side of the table, and according to Tosfos, it means just on the tabletop itself. Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says she's right to do this. Hodi dan. This mine, meaning my wife, in Yiddish they have the expression miner, meaning my wife, the Altadeber one says miner, the Altadeber's wife one says miner zakt, mine, meaning my husband, says. So here in Aramaic you have the same kind of thing. Hodidan, this one, mine, meaning my wife, Brate Rami Bachama, she is the daughter of Rami Bachama, or on the side of it here actually it says it should be Rami Bahava. The Rami Bachama Mora du Ovdahava. And Mori Bachama was the kind of person who was very careful in what he does. He's actually a medactic for myself. He's very particular about how he does things. He knows to do things the right way. If it weren't for the fact that my wife saw when she was growing up in her father's house that this is how it's done, Loihava Abda, she wouldn't have done it. So obviously this must be the right way to do it. Now, so what's the actual halacha? There is first of all a machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid, who the halacha is like over here. Is the halacha like the Rabbanan that ain't shining kemach b'yamtiv, or is it like Rabbi Huda, or is it like Rabbi Papias and Rabbi Huda ben Seira that you're allowed to? And then within that you have several different explanations of achronim. You have the Taz versus the Altadeber has a long and somewhat difficult kuntras achron in Hilchos Yom Tov discussing that the Taz and the Magen Avraham have different explanations of this whole business of sifting flour to get rid of a pebble or whatever. The final halacha is like this. When it comes to first sifting flour. You can have a goyish servant or whatever do the sifting using a shinui, like turning the sieve upside down or whatever, but you yourself cannot. Tosfos mentions that over here. When it comes to the second sifting, you should do it with a slight shinui. You don't need to turn over the sieve like Rabbi Yosef's wife did, but you should do it like on the tabletop, like Rav Ashi's wife did. If you're doing it, though, because a pebble or something fell into it, then you're allowed to sift it in a normal way, because then, again, you're not re-sifting it to make finer flour, then you're re-sifting to get rid of the dirt. One more interesting detail, and that is, but as Ravina said, you're not allowed to actually pick out the dirt by hand. That would be better. Usually, it's interesting, they have the rule in Hilchos Shabbos and Yom Tov is there's things that you're allowed to do by hand, but not with the utensil. Here, it's the other way around. You're allowed to use the sieve to get rid of the pebble, but not to do it by hand.
What?
Well, so according to Rashi, the issue is you could have sifted the flour before Yom Tov. Both of them. The first one you definitely could have done before Yom Tov. The second one, according to the Tanakhama of this price, also you could have done before Yom Tov. And therefore we're saying, so if a pebble fell in on Yom Tov, you couldn't have done before Yom Tov, that's why you were allowing it. That's what we're saying, then. most Rishonim say not like the Rambam, but the halacha is in fact like Rav Papias and Rav Yehuda ben Tzera, so you are allowed to resift it, but you do have to do some kind of shidri, like Rav Ashi's wife did, doing it on the table. And that's where you're re-sifting it because you want cleaner flour, not because of a pebble. There are three different cases. First sifting, second sifting because you want clean flour, or second sifting because of the pebble. The one you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov, or the only way you can have done on Yom Tov is to have a goyish servant do it with a shinri. The second one, where you want cleaner flour, you can do it, but you can do it, but you have to do it on the tabletop or something. And the third one, where there's a pebble, you can do it normally.
Because it's a pebble,
Mishnah says, "Holach adam eitzach chen v'ni harogulah." So a person is allowed to go to a storekeeper who he's usually a customer by, meaning that therefore the storekeeper trusts him, that'll pay after Yom Tov. But omalay, you can tell the storekeeper, "Ten li beitzim ve'egozim b'minyan." Give me a certain number of eggs or a certain number of nuts, and you're allowed to do that. Shekein derech balabayis li es moyne v'sech beitzik. That's what a person often does at home. It's not a matter of measuring. In other words, you don't measure out eggs by number. You're counting them by number. That's a normal thing to do. So it's not urgent to chol. We learn in a braisa. So there are other similar cases. A person can go to a shepherd who he's friendly with, but and he can tell him, give me one kid goat or one lamb. Or he can go, it's a tabach harogulat, so he can go to a butcher that he's friendly with, but he can tell him, can the kaf achas or yerach achas, give me one shoulder roast or one leg. It's a patam harogulat, so he can go to a person who raises fatted animals, like or fatted birds, a bird breeder that he's friendly with, but he can tell him, can the turach or gozalach, give me one turtle dove or one pigeon. Eitzel Nachta Marogalatzla, he can go to a baker that he's friendly with. Va'omalei, and he can tell him, Tenli Kikarecha, de Gluska Achas, give me one loaf of bread or one roll. Ve'eitzel Chenveni Arogalatzla, and he can go to a storekeeper he's friendly with. Va'omalei, and he can tell him, Tenli Estrim Beitzim, give me 20 eggs, a Chamishim Egozim, or 50 nuts, Asara Afarsikin, or 10 peaches, and 5 pomegranates, for Esreg Echad, and 1 Esreg. By now he has a whole Yom Tov meal. Or Vavachala Yaskulai Tchum Midya. As long as in all of these things, he does not mention a measurement. Rashi says this means you can't mention, for example, a kav, 2 kavim. You mention these things in terms of numbers, X number of nuts, X number of eggs, whatever. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, I move on to the article of Tzchum Mekach. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that no, midah is not an issue. It's rather you can't tell it, there's two things. You can't mention a measurement, and you also can't mention a monetary value. As we said a couple of Mishnayos ago, that's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos says that obviously, I mean, we said before, you're not allowed to mention measurements, you're not allowed to measure, and you're not allowed to mention measurements and dollar figures. So therefore, Tosfos says, and Rabbeinu Hanano says somewhat similarly, that what it means is that the word is not schum midah. Actually, yeah, Tosfos says exactly like Rabbeinu Hanano, that the word is not schum midah, a measurement, like Rashi says, a kav or two, but rather schum minyan, a summary of the total. Let's say, for example, you go to the storekeeper and you can tell him give me 20 eggs, but you can't tell him, you know, I already bought from you on credit 10 eggs yesterday, so give me another 20 and then I'll owe you now for 30. That you can't do. And the same thing, when Rav Shimon Elazar says schum mekach, is you can't say a similar thing. You would say, for example, you know, I already bought from you a dollar's worth of eggs yesterday, so give me another dollar's worth now, and then I'll owe you $2. So according to Tosfos' explanation, then is that Rav Shimon Elazar would be saying you are allowed to total up the sum. You're just not allowed to total up the financial amount. The monetary amount. According to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, yes, you would be allowed to say, you already sold me 10 eggs yesterday, give me another 10, and now I owe you 20. But you can't mention dollar amounts, whereas according to the Tanakhama, you can't mention the total either. In Shulchan Aruch, it paskins like both of these last statements, which means you can't do either. You can't mention the total of eggs, and you can't mention the total of money. But other than that, yes, you are allowed to buy things on credit on Yom Tov. Incidentally, I mean, these same rules technically apply to Shabbos as well. And in fact, these rules are brought in Shulchan Aruch, not they're mentioned briefly in Hilchos Yom Tov, but the main place where they're discussed is in Hilchos Shabbos.
They would go to store or
what? A store, yeah.
They would have open stores on Yom Tov.
That's what we were talking. We remember we had in the first parak, we had Machlokes Bishama Bishivol about opening these box like stores. This is the kind of thing we're talking about, that they would have them open on Yom Tov in order that people will be able to pick up Yom Tov supplies. Yeah.
To have a better
Yom Tov, exactly. So that you're allowed to do as long as you're not dealing with any finances or anything.
What was the thing about a box?
We learned in the first paragraph we had these box-like stores that had a shutter in front to close them off. We had a machlokes b'shama b'silo, whether you were allowed to take down the shutter and whether you were allowed to take down the shutter and put it back on Yom Tov. You would take down the shutter and use it as a counter, and later on you'd use it to close up the store.
On Yom Tov.
That's what we're saying, because you can have a store open on Yom Tov and theoretically even on Shabbos. And in order to supply people with things they need, as long as you're not dealing with money and as long as you're not...
So how do you get paid?
After Yom Tov, you square accounts.
That's why
in this Braisa that we quoted, it kept on mentioning Harogil... No, that's why in this Braisa it kept on saying Harogil Esloi, that it's a shepherd or a butcher or whatever it is that you're a regular customer by. So this way, after Yom Tov, the guy knows he's going to be able to figure out accounts with you and get paid.
It's funny.
A goy is not so simple, because then you get into the question which we had earlier in the perek: was this, you know, were these eggs laid today? Was this fruit picked today? Was it brought outside the tchum, etc.? So there you get into other issues that are discussed in Shulchan Aruch. But if it was a Jewish storekeeper, then you don't have any of those issues.
And in camp, they have in Shabbos, they have the canteen open.
The canteen, yeah.
So there's numbers they use around. They're like net numbers. It's clips they use.
Right, right. Aliyah. Well, they do that over here also for Aliyah, yeah. So.
Technically speaking, a store could be open in Flat Heights if they do clips.
If they did, yeah. Theoretically, according to that, it seems that, yeah. Although, again, I mean, I'm not sure actually how that thing with the clips would work, considering that we're saying over here that you can't mention an actual dollar figure or whatever. So if you can't mention it, I'm not sure how you're allowed to write it down either. Mela for Misha Beirach, you could argue it's a matter of tzedakah. That's different. But for the canteens, honestly, I don't know. I don't know what there is in the literature about it. I mean, I suppose they must have some kind of heter since they've been doing it for 50 years. Yeah. But yeah. Hadron alachein sadin.